Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last week, the Iowa legislature wrapped up its 2021 session, marking the end of an assembly that was dramatically shaped by the pandemic, also closing out a really consequential session that saw the passage of a number of Republican priorities. In fact, the Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer told reporters last week, Thursday morning, that most, if not all, of the priorities of the Republican caucus were achieved by the end of this session. Tax cuts, voting laws, protections for police, education, abortion, gun rights, many more. So this hour, we spend the hour discussing the highlights and sometimes contentious debates of the session with journalists who have covered the Iowa State House every step of the way this session. Kathy Obradovich returns to our airwaves, editor-in-chief of Iowa Capital Dispatch. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being on our program again. James Lynch, James Q. Lynch, political reporter with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. James, welcome back to you.
Hey, Ben. Good to be here.
And Katerina Sestarek, our own state government reporter here at IPR. Katerina, welcome to you.
Hi, Ben.
We want to welcome our listeners as well. What bill, new law, or legislative debate from this session especially interests you? Perhaps you have a question about the work of our lawmakers this past session. Join our conversation as we fly through a number of bills and laws and debates this hour. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. I want to, before we dig down into some of these, I want to ask each of you to sort of ask what you think this session will be remembered for. But first, probably a necessary backdrop for those listening and consuming a lot of national news, where we know Congress, the federal level, is in control, is controlled by Democrats. And also, we have a Democrat in the White House as a change. But Iowa Republicans swept the past election, the 2020 election, at the State House. They gained 7 Democrat-held seats in the House, maintained a healthy 32-18 majority in the Iowa Senate. And then in Congress, we had, lost, the Democrats lost seats. Ashley Hinson, Republican, ousted the incumbent, Abby Finkenauer, in Iowa's 1st District. And in that 2nd District race, U.S. Representative Marionette Miller Meeks narrowly winning over the Democratic competitor Rita Hart. Former President Trump won our state by 8%. Just to make sure we have that set, so we have that in mind when we talk about all the GOP successes in our legislature this session. Kathy, would you start us off? What do you think this session will be most remembered for from the many, many successes by the GOP?
Well, I think of it as a session of contrasts, because the legislature and the Republican majority in the legislature did, in fact, accomplish some significant things that were bipartisan. So Republicans and Democrats came together on some significant workforce-related legislation, like expanding broadband, which, by the way, was also a big spending proposal. But they also, I think, more than we've seen in a long time, advance really significantly ideological and partisan legislation, including, for example, some of the COVID-related legislation that removed mitigation and restrictions related to vaccines and masks.
Mm-hmm. James Lynch, you've covered so many sessions over the years. What will this one stand out for you as?
Well, obviously, the COVID situation, that the way the legislature operated this year, and with a lot of virtual sort of possibilities for people to follow the legislature from home or wherever, which was quite a change. And what's interesting to me is how the House and Senate took different approaches. The Senate allowed much more participation, virtual or remote participation than the House did. The House basically said you can watch from remote connection, but you can't participate. And the other thing is, I think sort of the partisan agenda that we saw advanced by Republicans that was very similar in many cases to agendas being promoted by Republican legislatures in other states, issues like gun rights, election changes, those sorts of things that seem to be sort of a universal Republican agenda.
Mm-hmm. Katerina Sestarek, in your experience covering this session day to day, what will stand out for you?
I think the beginning of the session really stands out just because, you know, it kind of started just a few days after the attack on the U.S. Capitol. It seemed like tensions were really high at the start of the session with both the pandemic and just, you know, the aftermath of that attack on the U.S. Capitol. And I think that really carried into a lot of the session. And it just kind of, I think there was quite a partisan divide. But as Kathy mentioned, there were also some major bipartisan things that happened this year, too.
Mm-hmm. Katerina, let's continue with what you mentioned there, too, the January 6th insurrection in Washington, rippling across the country, shocking us as well, of course. But we have a new election law in Iowa, and we have echoes of various election law changes in many Republican-controlled states in the country. Katerina, remind us what happened here. What propelled us to new election laws in this state, and what were some of the chief aspects of the changes we will now have?
Right. So Governor Reynolds signed this new voting law in early March, and it was something that kind of was introduced and passed and was signed into law in just a couple of weeks. And this one shortens the time allowed for early mail and in-person voting. It restricts the mass mailing of absentee ballot request forms, which is, you know, something that likely contributed to record voter turnout in 2020, puts in new criminal penalties for election officials who disobey state guidance, marks voter registration as inactive if someone misses one general election. There's a lot in this bill, and there's already a lawsuit pending against it. But, you know, and then at the very end of the session as well, there was kind of a surprise amendment to a bill that puts further limits on who can return a voter's absentee ballot and how they can do that. So, you know, this applies to people who are maybe helping someone who's disabled or elderly to return their ballot. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, this is something where Republican lawmakers who supported this were never able to point to any real problems with Iowa's elections. They never said, you know, they didn't say there was any evidence of voter fraud in Iowa, but brought up, you know, kind of false claims of voter fraud in other places and false claims of a stolen election to kind of back up the passage of this law.
Yeah. And Kathy Obradovich, failing that any evidence of voter fraud is the reason for this, what's behind it? I mean, there you have the Republican narrative and the Democratic narrative, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a partisan narrative. And if you look around the country, you saw Republican legislators enacting similar types of legislation in places where, which also, you know, may have had zero problems. And Republicans tried to turn that rhetoric around. They said, well, you know, Democrats said that when the last time we enacted voter restrictions before the 2020 election, that they said this would, you know, disenfranchise voters and the sky was falling. And none of that happened because we had record turnout. So therefore, these new restrictions won't be any problem either. And so, you know, that is the kind of that I think that is the way they sort of justified the idea that we needed more voting restrictions in Iowa in the absence of any significant problems or fraud.
Mm-hmm. James, how do you see it, the new election law?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I can add anything to it. It just seemed like they were addressing things that hadn't really been a problem, especially in the most recent election where we had record turnout and auditors really went above and beyond, I think, in making voting accessible to people through mail-in ballots and, you know, drop boxes and those sorts of things. So it was hard to pinpoint where the problem was.
James, I wonder, to the extent that you have your eye on what other states have done, where does Iowa's new laws, where do they exist on the spectrum of heavy restriction, heavier restriction, compared to those who have just had a sort of a lighter touch on changing election law?
In some cases, Iowa's law was more restrictive. In some areas, not. Now, for example, the absentee early voting period was longer than the national average. It was, I believe, 29 days, and the national average is like 22. Now we're at 20, so under the average, but in the ballpark. So you could say, you know, I was average, I guess, in that regard. A lot of these things, and beyond this bill, one of the things that struck me about this session, Ben, was that leaders in the legislature always like to talk about, well, we're not like Washington, D.C. We get things done, yada, yada, yada. But it strikes me that the legislature is becoming more like Washington, D.C., and I think this sort of universal agenda that we were seeing in Iowa and other states is part of that, is that the Republican Party is pushing a heavy agenda on a national basis. It's not just happening in Iowa, it's not just happening in one state, but this is part of a national agenda that's being carried out state by state. And so the partisan fights that we see in Washington are really becoming sharper in the state legislature.
If you've just joined us, join our conversation as we discuss the 2021 legislative session here in Iowa, which wrapped up last Wednesday in a late night session just before midnight. James Lynch, you just heard him, political reporter with the Gazette with us this hour. Katerina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter, and Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief, Iowa Capital Dispatch. 1-866-780-9100 if you'd like to ask a question. Far too much for us to get into any great depth on all the changes that were enacted by lawmakers and signed or soon to be signed, we assume, by the governor. But we would like you to ask your questions, raise your concerns. Cindy is with us in Des Moines. Cindy, welcome to the program. What do you have to chip in?
Yes. My name's Cindy, and I would just like to say that I think the Republican Party is pretty much trying to keep Donald Trump happy.
Okay. There's a short to-the-point comment. Kathy Obradovich, the ex-president, former president, also with eyes, we understand, towards 2024. How much is his presence, was his presence felt in this legislative session, Kathy?
Well, there was definitely an indication of that when the election laws were being debated, that, as Katerina said, there was talk about, you know, concerns about how that federal election went. I think more significantly than Donald Trump himself, though, is an interest in the Republican Party here keeping his supporters in Iowa happy. Donald Trump, of course, won Iowa by 8 percentage points. He won it handily over Joe Biden. And there are still a significant number of Donald Trump supporters here in the state. And so I think, you know, that is definitely on the minds of those elected officials, who many of whom are going to face re-election in 2022.
Mm-hmm. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking over the 2021 legislative session. Tomorrow is the anniversary of George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis. So many chapters to that story, which started a year ago. Tomorrow, instead of this program tomorrow, over the noon hour, we'll have a special program that reminds us of that grim anniversary. George Floyd killed by a Minneapolis police officer, setting off months of racial justice protests in thousands of communities across the country, including here in Iowa. Katerina, tell us a little bit about what happened this session. that echoed that occurrence. We had the Back the Blue legislation touted by the governor. Relate to us what actually was enacted and signed by the governor.
Well, so far, lawmakers have mostly Republican lawmakers have passed a bill that raises penalties for protest-related offenses. It puts qualified immunity into state law, likely making it more difficult to hold officers accountable when they commit misconduct. It makes it a crime to not stop for an unmarked police car, deals with some employment issues for police officers and peace officers. And this is something that, you know, Republicans say we need to show support for law enforcement. That's kind of what they're saying, is they ran on backing the blue, and that's what they're doing with this bill. But of course, this doesn't do anything towards, you know, the cause of racial justice. Nothing was done this session to advance, you know, or to address any of the concerns that were raised by protesters or by anyone who was hoping to, you know, at least slightly make things better for Black Iowans, for other Iowans of color. And Governor Kim Reynolds had included in her bill legislation that would have banned racial profiling by police and tracked data on police stops. But, you know, that barely got any consideration by Republican lawmakers, and they never advanced that part.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, the note there, well, I had Black leaders in our legislature on this program not too long ago, and they registered that there was a distinct difference between the immediate aftermath at the legislature concerning racial issues and policing last year compared with the session this year. What are your thoughts on that, and specifically that none of the legislation had a racial profiling ban? The data collection requirements that the governor proposed at the end of the session were not there as well.
Yeah, they're right. I mean, members of the Black Caucus in the House and other Democrats pointed out that at the end of the legislative session last year, when these protests were, you know, still going on in Iowa, that lawmakers, both parties, got together and unanimously passed some policing and some police misconduct legislation, including things like banning chokeholds that was directly related to George Floyd's death, or making it harder for police officers who are fired from misconduct to get rehired elsewhere. And, you know, again, that was a significant moment of unity in the Iowa legislature. This year, it was very, very different. Not only did the sort of Black Lives Matter priorities that Katarina just mentioned not come forward, but lawmakers did not work together in a bipartisan way on this legislation. And while there were some Democrats who voted for the final bill, and it may be a show of support for police, a lot of Democrats said that they were really unhappy that Republicans were framing their vote for or against this bill as a measure of their support for police.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100, about 4 or 5 minutes before we need to go to break. Chris is with us from Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Chris. I think you want to chip in on this theme from what I can see on my screen.
Yes. Part of the problem at the Capitol here that we're having with the House and Senate, with the bigotry, because that's what's going on at the Capitol, is the bigotry that they are allowed to practice, even though they shouldn't be able to practice, they're able to practice. Now they're doing it within law. And when we still have Trump Republicans, that's part of the problem. The Trump Republicans, they're bigots. That's just the bottom line.
Let's be specific. We like to talk policies and not name call on this program, Chris. So what policies are you specifically talking about, or lack of policies?
The one you just talked about. How is that helping any people of color? Mm-hmm. To rectify the problems dealing with the police here in the state of Iowa, if you're setting up things to make sure nothing is going to change. So how is anything going to change if you're making sure nothing does change and you want to keep it still the same? Mm-hmm. That's why people of color can say what we're saying is because it's happening to us.
Yep.
We're the ones that are catching the hail. And so that's why we're able to say that the bigotry, which is happening at the Capitol, that we're not talking about the bigotry that is going on there. And that's part of the problem, is because it's not being dealt with. And in order for it to be dealt with or to even change, you have to talk about it. You have to deal with it. You can't keep putting blinders on, acting as if it's not there, because it's been there for years.
Okay, Chris.
As a matter of fact.
Yep, we're coming up on a break, and we have other callers. Chris, your message loud and clear. Thank you very much from Des Moines. Jump in here. We have a couple minutes before our break. James, on this issue here, the racial justice issue, how do you see it? And perhaps comment on the comment we just heard.
Well, I think probably for people of color, it certainly looks that way. Chris was right in that the defund back the blue bill, saying if you defund the police department or your law enforcement, that the state is going to somehow penalize those cities, doesn't really do anything to address the problem as they see it, about the unequal treatment of people of color. And quite frankly, I don't know that anybody was talking about defunding the police. And no city councils are saying they're not going to have police departments. That idea kind of got proposed in Iowa City and shot down rather quickly. There are cities that are looking at how they could better use their resources to address, the situations in their communities. But, in a way, this is sort of reminiscent of sanctuary cities from a year or two ago, where there really were no sanctuary cities, but it was a big issue for lawmakers, and they wanted to ban sanctuary cities and penalize cities that became sanctuary cities. And again, it's the same sort of thing. We're gonna back the blue, and if you defund the police, we're gonna penalize you. Well, nobody, I don't hear anybody talking about defunding the police, except Democrats warning that the changes in property taxes, the loss of the backfill to cities and counties, could affect those budgets more than anything a city council wants to do.
Okay, we have just a few seconds. Katarina, you wanted to jump in here very quickly.
I just wanted to note that, we did see things like lawmakers passing a bill to ban discussion of systemic racism, essentially.
Yeah.
So that might also go to Chris's point.
Yeah, we want to talk about that in our second half hour. We have callers as well. Join our discussion as we talk over some of the major themes of the 2021 Iowa legislative session with Katarina Sestarek of IPR, Kathy Obradovich of Iowa Capital Dispatch, and James Lynch of the Gazette. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer back with more of River to River in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with journalist Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief, Iowa Capital Dispatch, Katarina Sestarek, state government reporter at IPR, and James Lynch, political reporter with the Gazette, taking some views of the just passed 2021 legislative session, taking your input, your questions, 1-866-780-9100. Before we do go to callers, because we had a thread there continuing there when we talked about the anniversary of George Floyd's death, which will be tomorrow, and the policing reforms that we had in the Iowa legislature. Katarina, you mentioned related to this diversity training. We saw a real focus from Republicans in the legislature on what they saw as cancel culture on campuses across the country, and wanting to have free speech trainings and divisive concepts being banned. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so Republicans passed a bill that puts limits on certain concepts related to racism and sexism in school curriculum and in government agency diversity trainings. So some of these include that, you know, you can't promote the concept that Iowa or the U.S. are fundamentally or systemically racist, things like that. And then, you know, there's some concerns with that about prohibiting discussions of systemic racism, prohibiting discussions of implicit bias, which, you know, might be important in a lot of government agency or school diversity trainings. And this was all kind of tied up with some other, you know, free speech concerns. GOP lawmakers were concerned that conservative students on college campuses were being unfairly treated for voicing their views. And, you know, so this is kind of all tied up in that, in just sort of free speech and education. But now, you know, we have this bill that bans certain concepts, and there's a lot of concerns about this having a chilling effect on diversity trainings.
Right. And Kathy, was it last week that the governor signed the bill that requires the Board of Regents to conduct additional First Amendment training for university staff?
Yes. And that was really sort of the bipartisan part of this, even though the concern was coming from Republicans, there was Democratic support for that bill that basically just says, you know, that on college campuses, student groups, faculty ought to have training to so that they know what, you know, when they are encroaching on students' freedom of speech. And so it was really sort of the divisive concepts part of this, and that became partisan and controversial. And that part of it is legislation that we are seeing replicated all over the country. So it deals with a subject known as critical race theory. Governors in Idaho and Oklahoma have already signed bills to forbid teaching in schools of critical race therapy. There's another new law in Arkansas, and there's at least a half a dozen other states or more that are debating it now in their legislature. So we are seeing that as a Republican theme around the state. And the way I think we saw it play out in Iowa in particular is GOP lawmakers really pushing back and resisting the idea of systemic racism and the idea of implicit bias. They didn't want any kind of teaching that suggested that, you know, white people need to, you know, reflect on whether yep. they have some sort of implicit bias against people who are racial minorities.
Right. And Kathy, in rejecting, well, a project, a huge project that has roots here in Iowa with its founder, the 1619 Project, reframing slavery in U.S. history, right?
Yes, there was a bill that specifically addressed the 1619 Project and tried to ban teaching of that. That bill did not pass, and the one that did pass didn't specifically mention the 1619 Project. But I would argue that that was on lawmakers' minds when they were dealing with this divisive concepts bill.
Okay, the hour fast slipping away from us. Let's get to our phones. Ward is with us from Cedar Rapids. Ward, what do you want to ask about or air here?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I keep wondering, you know, when will the discussion turn very seriously to the truth of matters? I mean, there's so much legislation being based on things that patently are not true or have not been studied or looked at, or, you know, half truths that people just get away with saying, you know, this is the case and that's how we're going to move forward. I think it's a broad application. It goes to police immunity, to voter rights, diversity training, where our legislatures are saying things and depending on things that just aren't right, and they get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not agreeing on the facts, Ward. We understand your question here. James, tackle that one. That is an interesting concept, isn't it? An interesting idea. In election law, we had, you know, on this program, other programs across the country, the reasons given by Republican lawmakers for enacting voter reform, restrictions, some would say, is that, well, our constituents tell us that they're worried about voter fraud, but there's no data for that, right?
Exactly. There's very little evidence of voter fraud, especially here in Iowa. There, you know, you can find a few cases over the past 20 years, but it's certainly not a major problem. And I think Ward is right that we're seeing you always see this to some degree in politics, that I have my facts, you have your facts. But really, on a lot of these issues we've talked about today, it's sort of a case of where legislators are responding to things that people in the public are saying, that, you know, we don't believe that Iowa is systematically racist. We don't believe, we believe there is voter fraud. You know, so we have to take these steps to protect elections. And it makes things more divisive. And certainly if you're a person of color or a member of a minority in Iowa, it looks like people are targeting you. And maybe some of this is born out of a fear that Iowa is changing and we don't want to change. We want to preserve Iowa the way it was. And so we're enacting these laws to make sure that we don't talk about things like slavery and sexism and those racism and all those isms that might challenge our view of Iowa. Mm-hmm. But pretty much any of these bills, when there was a debate, there was just like, you know, black and white between the facts one party talked about and the facts the other party talked about.
Right. And Kathy, I think Ward's question goes to the future. And when will we get a more, and as James just pointed out, politics is full of your facts versus my facts. But it seems like the cleft, the chasm between those two worlds are huge right now. Ward wants to know, will we get back to a more unified version of facts to spin perhaps one way or another, but not to completely see in different worlds?
Yeah, and honestly, I don't see where that road back is. It's really up to voters, I think, to decide whether to hold their legislators, their elected officials, politicians in general, accountable for lying. You know, so far there, you know, just in, especially in recent years, there has not been consequences for lawmakers, and you know, we in the media can do all the fact checks that we want, but that just, you know, if the fact check comes out in a way that, you know, somebody has already decided they believe the other way, then they just don't believe the media. So I don't really see a way back from this unless voters decide that the truth is important to them and they want to hold their legislative officials and their elected officials accountable for telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating question from Ward in Cedar Rapids. Let's go to another caller. Bill is with us in Sac City. I had to look closely. It's Sac City, right, Bill?
Yes, and thank you, Ben, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm on the city council in Sac City, and the legislature and governor eroded just another local control issue by disallowing cities, counties, and school districts from passing or continuing mask mandates. The mandates allow cities, counties, and schools to better manage COVID-19, and as a local official, it appears to me to be irresponsible. I'd like Kathy and James' input on it, both on the mandate issue as well as the local control issue that's eroding away.
Very good. Bill in Sac City. James, I know you are very interested in local control. This is a flag that Republicans have traditionally held high, local control. Local people know better, right?
Right. And this year we saw, I would say, big steps at eroding local control. I mean, the mask mandate was one where, the legislature said we're passing, we're saying city councils and school boards can't require masks. They, in an education bill, they required that the Pledge of Allegiance is said every day. The ban on city ordinances preventing landlords from rejecting federal housing vouchers. The vaccine passports bill, I guess, was another one. The election bill touched on local control, too. So many of these bills that we've already talked about in one way or another affected local control. But, yeah, it's really amazing to watch how much that has changed from Republicans championing local control to really passing mandates on what local governments do. And, you know, it's, you know, just a year or 2 years ago, Republicans consistently said, well, we don't like mandates. But I guess now maybe that's a consequence of COVID. They like mandates.
Right. Bill in Sac City would like, Kathy, your opinion on this as well.
Well, I think that this is also another example that we just talked about where lawmakers are responding to what they heard from their constituents. And their constituents were telling them, we think masks are useless, or we think that they might be harmful. Mm-hmm. They are hurting our freedom. And they were responding to that instead of the CDC guidance, for example, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is still saying that masks are a good idea inside, especially for people who are not vaccinated. And of course, you know, young kids can't be vaccinated yet. So, you know, I think that there was a lot of discussion about the science of this versus the politics. And in this case, it was definitely the politics that won.
Mm-hmm. We have about 10 minutes left of our discussion. So much to get to. Let's fly over quickly some other major items. Let's talk about, Katerina, inform us about, well, this is really the end of the session, a big tax bill. And they're saying this is a major accomplishment of the session. What did Republicans accomplish in the area of taxing?
Right. So this tax bill is one of the big things that was holding up the end of the session. They ended, you know, about 3 weeks late. And so this would ensure that more income tax cuts can take effect in 2023. It shifts mental health funding from counties to the state. This is something that, you know, supporters of this say that there will be more accountability and more equity in mental health services because of this, because the state can withhold funding from the mental health regions that aren't providing the services that they're supposed to locally. And then there's also more controversial part of this is phasing out backfill payments to local governments. You know, Democrats are saying that this is going to lead to increased property taxes, while Republicans say that cities and counties will be able to figure it out, that it's not a huge percentage of their budget. And then it includes a bunch of other things, too, like expanding childcare and housing tax credits, phasing out the state inheritance tax. And Senate Republicans said this will amount to $1 billion in tax cuts over the next 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we have that shift there, Katerina, in the mental health, how mental health is paid for, services, disability services are funded in the state, right? That's pretty fundamental.
Right. This is something, you know, like the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Iowa has been calling for state investment in mental health services for a long time. I think we're the only state that still funds mental health services based on county property taxes. And it's kind of, you know, when it's left up to 99 local governments and the 14 mental health regions that the counties are members of, even though the state has passed laws that say, you know, you need to be providing these mental health services by this date, that hasn't necessarily worked out. And you know, a big reason for that is because since it's funded by the counties, the state really can't enforce that. So I think there's going to be a big change in the mental health system because of this. So that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps before we close this hour, we can talk about the two issues there passed, making steps this session in terms of changing our Iowa Constitution. Kathy, an abortion amendment passed the General Assembly for the first time. Where is that in its path to and how would it change the Iowa Constitution if voted on and approved by voters?
So this is about halfway through the process. Lawmakers have approved this similar amendments in the past. They changed the language of it this year, and the legislation has to go through the next General Assembly, which will be after the 2022 elections, before it can go to voters to be voted on in the next general election after that. So So it's got a ways to go. This is really a response to the Supreme Court declaring in a ruling dealing with an abortion bill that Iowa's constitution provides a constitutional right to abortion. And that is something conservatives say there is no mention of abortion in the state constitution. And they wanted to make it very, very clear that there is no right to abortion in the state constitution. Their argument is that, you know, as long as Roe v. Wade is still in place on the federal level, that this is not going to outlaw abortions in Iowa if it passes. But opponents say that that legislation, or if the constitutional amendment goes into effect, that it will make it significantly easier to pass restrictions on abortion in state law going forward.
Mm-hmm. It's still a bit of a path to go. And the soonest, if my notes are correct, Kathy, the soonest Iowans could vote on such an amendment after being approved by the next General Assembly would be 2024, right?
Yeah, unless they were to, you know, schedule a new general election between now and then, that would be the earliest.
Okay. James, can you talk a little bit about the other possible constitutional change concerning gun laws in Iowa?
Right. The amendment that has been proposed basically sort of enacts the Second Amendment at the state level, but it goes a little bit further in that it says that any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny, which is like a higher standard in terms of a legal standing or the court finding that it's not constitutional. And opponents of this say that it would make it difficult for future state lawmakers to pass any laws to regulate gun ownership, and could subject existing standards to legal challenges. But this is a major priority for Republican legislators to get this on the ballot and let Iowans vote on it.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, we have some unfinished business there, Katerina, on redistricting. We had the census data slow, late, not delivered yet because of the pandemic, of course. And so tell us, what are the plans? Because law says that every 10 years, based on the census data gathered every 10 years, redistricting has to take place to reapportion where needed.
Right. I think there aren't any super specific plans yet, but there are tentative plans to have a special session in August. It'll obviously depend on when the state receives the census data because it has been delayed. And there's also a deadline in the Iowa Constitution for legislative redistricting. And if the legislature doesn't approve those maps by September 15th, then the Iowa Supreme Court will have to step in. And they have only given a very vague statement that it's not really clear what they would do, if they would totally take that over or if they would send it back to the lawmakers to get to ultimately approve those maps.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, before we go, perhaps a word from the Democrats' perspective as you see it. I see Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls called it a very difficult session. He said the Republicans brought some of the most radical, culturally divisive agenda items to their trifecta rule here. Seen from a Democratic perspective, what's their way toward wresting power in at least one of the chambers, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Democrats obviously have smaller minorities than they've had in the past, and that is certainly difficult to deal with, especially when you see legislation passing that you have, you know, no ability to stop. So I can see the frustration there. Ultimately, you know, the party is going to have to figure out how they are going to get some of those rural voters in particular back on their side. And I haven't heard anybody who has all the answers to that yet.
Okay, we have 30 seconds or so. James Lynch, what's your view on advice for the Democrats to come back to power in some way?
I think in the short term, maybe they're going to focus on the governor's race in 2022 and hopefully defeat
Kim Reynolds and give them a firewall against the Republican legislature, because to make up the seats they need in both the House and the Senate might take more than one election cycle. That, you know, it might take two or three election cycles to get to a majority in either chamber.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've run out of time for this hour. I want to thank you very much, James Lynch, political reporter with the Gazette, Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief, Iowa Capital Dispatch, and our own Katerina Sestarek, state government reporter here at IPR. Katerina, Kathy, James, thank you much for the hour. Thanks to all the callers we had. We, of course, had so much to cover, and I think we did a pretty good job at having a quick survey of it, as much as we could get done in an hour. Thank you all.
Thanks, Ben.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on this program, we'll have a special marking the anniversary of the killing of George Floyd. We hope you'll tune in over the noon hour. River to River today, produced by Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.